Silence shrugged and sat back in his command chair. A tall, lean man in his 40s, with a thickening waistline and a receding hairline he tried not to be touchy about. He sat in the command chair with a quiet dignity, as though he belonged there. He'd served the Empire to the best of his ability all his adult life, and if sometimes he found himself on a mission he had no stomach for, well, that was the Empire for you, under Her Imperial Majesty Lionstone the 14th, also known as the Iron Bitch. Silence stopped that thought short. It wasn't wise to let one's thoughts run free in some directions. You never knew when an Esper might be listening. He concentrated on the pirate ship before him. Small craft, built more for speed than action. No threat to a star cruiser. But she shouldn't have been here. Not just now. Silence looked across at his comm officer.
Do we have an identification on her yet?
Not yet, Captain. Their AI is talking our ears off, but not actually saying much. It's trying to feed us some nonsense about being a medical ship on a mercy mission, but it's the wrong kind of craft for that, and it doesn't have the proper identification codes. Odds are they're just trying to keep us occupied while they power up for a hyperjump. Do we stop them, Captain, or let them go?
We stop them,
said a calm, cold voice, and Silence nodded to Investigator Frost as she came to stand beside him. Frost was in her late 20s, tall and lively muscular, with a gun on her hip and a long sword hanging down her back. Even standing still, she looked competent and extremely dangerous, like a predator in a world of prey. Dark eyes burned coldly in a pale, controlled face, framed by auburn hair cropped close to the skull. You couldn't call her pretty, but there was a daunting glamour to her, attractive and intimidating at the same moment. Investigators were trained from childhood to be loyal, efficient, and deadly. Their job was to study newly discovered alien species and determine how much of a threat they might prove to the Empire. Depending on those findings, the aliens would then be either enslaved or exterminated. There was no third option. Investigators were also used as security chiefs, bodyguards, and assassins. They were cold, calculating killing machines, and they were either good at their job or dead. Silence and Frost had worked together on several missions and understood each other, which was as close to friendship as you could get with an investigator.
There's no hurry, said Silence. A ship that small takes forever to power up. They're not going anywhere yet.
I don't like it,
Frost said flatly.
An unexpected ship in orbit waiting for us? I don't believe in coincidence. Someone has alerted our target that he's been outlawed. That ship is either here to protect him or carry him away. Either way, our orders are quite specific. Under no circumstances is the target to be allowed to escape.
Silence nodded. The outlaw was only ever referred to as the target in public. It wouldn't do for the lower orders to know that a lord had been outlawed, especially one with such a famous name. The name Deathstalker could still command respect and possibly allies in certain quarters, irrespective of the Empress's wishes or orders, which was why an entire star cruiser had been sent to see that the Deathstalker's outlawing went smoothly. He was to be captured and executed before word could get out to potential friends. Only it seemed someone had beaten them to it.
The ship could have been sent to occupy our attention while the target is helped to escape. We can't afford to waste time on it. With your permission, I'll form a boarding party and get some answers in person.
Not so fast, Investigator. Let's do this by the book. Esper Fortuna?
Yes, Captain.
The Darkwind's Esper, Thomas Fortuna, stepped forward to stand on the Captain's other side, opposite the Investigator. He was short, dumpy, and his uniform looked as though he'd inherited it from someone larger. His shaven head glistened brightly.
I want a full scan on that ship. See what you can pick up.
Yes, Captain.
Fortuna's mind leapt up and out, and his face relaxed completely, losing all trace of life and personality. Then his face twisted, and he was back again, shaking his head disgustedly.
That ship is full of death and the memory of pain. So many traces I can't even identify the sources, except to say they're all human and all dead. There are body banks on that ship, Captain, brimming over with the residues of suffering. They're clone leggers.
Nothing to do with the target? You're sure?
As far as I can be, Captain.
That settles it, then. We can't waste time over a handful of body snatchers. Blow the ship to pieces. The universe will smell better once they're gone.
Couldn't agree more. Go ahead, Investigator. Enjoy yourself.
The pirate ship Shard rocked as the Dark Wind opened fire on her. Hannah got the force screens up in time, deflecting the raging energy from the disruptor cannon, but it was all the AI could do to maintain them under the constant barrage from the Empire ship. Hazel Dark fired back, but her two cannon made no impression on the Dark Wind's superior shields. Lights went out all over the Shard as the AI drained more and more energy from the ship's systems to maintain the force screens. The power accumulated for a hyperjump was used up in seconds, and one by one the body banks shut down, their fragile contents left to warm and rot. The Shard jerked this way and that, like a fish on a hook, running through every evasive maneuver in the AI's data banks, but the Dark Wind stayed with them, the disruptor cannon firing one after another to maintain a constant pressure. Hazel shuddered at her fire controls, feeling every hammering blow on the Shard's shields through her mental link to the computers. She pounded impatiently on the arms of her chair as she waited the 3 agonizing minutes it took for her antiquated disruptor cannon to power up between shots. The Dark Wind didn't have that problem. She fired her disruptors in overlapping waves so that each cannon had time to recharge before it had to fire again. The Empire ship also had far greater resources of power to draw on. The Shard didn't stand a chance, and everyone knew it. Light dimmed on the Shard's bridge as fires broke out in a dozen places. Smoke formed faster than the extractor fans could deal with it. Hazel coughed raggedly as she tried to concentrate on the fire controls. The station next to hers exploded, the man sitting there suddenly engulfed in flames. He screamed shrilly till the air in his lungs burned up. The AI was gabbling incoherently in Hazel's ears, its voice breaking up as it struggled to hold the disintegrating ship together. She spun round in her seat and glared across the smoke-filled bridge at Captain Marquis.
Surrender, damn it! They're tearing us apart!
No point. They must know we're clone leggers. They're not interested in our surrender. We can't fight, we can't run, and we haven't a hope in hell of raising enough power to go hyper. That only leaves one option. I'm going to use Loverboy on their shields and then ram the bastards. If I'm going down, I'm taking them with me.
Hazel's fire control exploded, throwing her out and across the bridge. She landed hard, driving the breath from her lungs, her uniform blackened and scorched. She was badly burned, but for the moment, shock smothered most of the pain. She rolled slowly onto her side, fighting to stay conscious. She could hear Marquis giving orders in a calm, reasonable voice.
Lover boy.
Hazel clung to the thought as she forced herself up onto her knees. Lover boy was an experimental program the captain had acquired on Brahmin II. It was called Lover boy because love laughs at locksmiths, and because the program was designed to give another ship's security systems a real good screwing. The captain was going to use Lover boy to get the Dark Wind to drop her force shields and then ram her. The Shard would hit like a single huge torpedo, and that would be the end of the Dark Wind. And the Shard. Hazel lurched to her feet, grabbed the nearest station to steady herself, and glared through the smoke and flames at Captain Marquis.
Are you crazy? We'll all be killed!
He didn't answer her. His gaze was fixed on his computer displays, and he was laughing. Hazel looked wildly round for help, only to find she and Marquis were the only living crew left on the bridge. The rest were dead at their stations. Hazel staggered away from the bridge, stumbling through the smoke and wreckage. If she was quick, she could still get to an escape pod before the two ships hit. And if she was really lucky, the escape pod would still be working. The corridor lurched back and forth as Hazel forced herself into a run.
Adrenaline was putting strength back into her legs, but she knew that wouldn't last long. Solid steel creaked and groaned around her as the ship began to break up. Marquis had to be directing most of the Shard's remaining power into the force shields, but some of the punishment was getting through anyway. The lights were going out, one by one. Hazel tried to contact Hannah through her comm implant, but the AI was still talking gibberish, mumbling to itself in a querulous voice. Hazel rounded a corner, and then stumbled to a halt. One of the bulkheads had been blown inward, blocking the corridor completely. Spikes of jagged metal thrust out in all directions, some of it still glowing cherry red from the heat of the recent explosion. Hazel took the opportunity to get her breath back and studied the situation as calmly as she could. Panicking or screaming with rage might feel good, but it wouldn't get her anywhere. The first real pain from her burns was beginning to gnaw at her, but she forced the awareness down to a level she could deal with. She grabbed hold of a few spikes that were only uncomfortably warm and tried to shift the steel mass, but it didn't budge an inch. She bit her lower lip, scowling. This was the only way to the escape pods. She had to get through. Her hand fell to the gun on her hip. Using an energy weapon in a confined space was always dangerous, but nowhere near as dangerous as being trapped here when the two ships hit. She drew her disruptor, set it to maximum dispersal, and fired before she could think better of it. The raging energy beam punched a hole clean through the steel barrier, leaving a tunnel that stretched away into the metal for as far as she could see. It wasn't much of a tunnel, 3 feet in diameter at most, but it would have to do. She just hoped it would have an opening at the other end. The sides of the hole glowed red with a sullen heat, and Hazel knew she couldn't afford to touch them. But she was going to have to crawl through the tunnel on all fours, and that meant contact with her hands and knees. Her uniform would protect her knees, for a while anyway, but she'd have to do something to protect her bare hands. She put away her gun, drew her backup knife from her boot, and cut away one of her sleeves. She cut the cloth in two again, put away her knife, and wrapped the cloth around her hands. She looked again at the red-hot sides of the tunnel before her and winced. This was going to be really unpleasant. She swallowed hard and clambered quickly into the opening before she could change her mind. The heat hit her from all directions, and she could feel the skin of her face tightening and smarting. Sweat poured off her, evaporating in seconds. She crawled on through the steel tunnel, and the heat seared her hands and knees, even through the protecting cloth. She hurried as much as she could, but it was a narrow space with no room to maneuver. Her back brushed against the tunnel roof now and again, and she had to grit her teeth against the heat and pain. The cloth pad she'd made for her hands started to smoke. Her eyes narrowed to watering slits against the fiery air, and her lungs felt scorched with every breath. The metal creaked and groaned around her, as though it might collapse at any moment. Hazel's heart hammered in her chest, and a blind, unreasoning fear gnawed at her self-control till she wanted to scream. But she didn't. Screaming wouldn't help. She forced herself on through the heat, shuffling forward on hands and knees that seemed to be one blazing mass of pain. She could smell her flesh burning. Tears ran down her face, as much from frustration as pain, evaporating almost at once. And then she was out of the tunnel, and the heat fell away from her like a burning blanket. She'd made her way through the obstruction. She was back in the open corridor, and the cool air was like a blessing. She lurched to her feet, gritting her teeth at the pain in her hands and knees and back till her jaw ached. Her leggings had burnt right through, and the blackened cloths around her hands fell apart as she tried to unwrap them. She stumbled on, not daring to look at her hands, trying to find the strength to hurry. She had no idea of how much time she had left. Her struggle in the steel tunnel had seemed to last forever. Most of the lights were out now, and the ship was dark and echoing. The smell of smoke was heavy in the air. She forced herself on, having to guess the right way as often as not. But finally, she came to the escape pods, sitting calmly in their racks, as though they had all the time in the world. Hazel just stood and stared numbly at them for a long moment. All her strength had gone into getting her here, and she seemed to have none left to do anything else.
A series of explosions shook the ship, jarring her back to her senses. She stumbled over to the nearest pod and hit the activation button with her blackened fist. The door swung open maddeningly slowly, and the interior of the pod lit up as its systems came online. Hazel clambered inside and sank into the waiting crash webbing with something like relief. It felt so good to be off her feet at last. The door hissed shut behind her, and she worked her jaw to pop her ears as the air pressure changed. The pod's cabin was barely a dozen feet long, with just enough room for two passengers. It occurred to Hazel that it was not unlike lying in a coffin, and the thought amused her briefly. A fitting fate for a would-be grave robber. She pushed the thought aside and painfully forced her blistered and stiffened fingers through the series of commands that would eject the pod from the shard. She braced herself for the impact, and only slowly realized that nothing was happening. She ran through the launch sequence again, crying out at the pain in her hands, but still there was no response. Panic flared up in her, and the cramped confines of the escape pod were suddenly unbearably claustrophobic. She started to get up out of the crash webbing, and only stopped herself with an effort of will. There was no point in leaving the pod. The shard was a death ship now. Her only hope for survival was to make the pod work. The panic began to die away as she made herself study the problem logically. There was nothing wrong with the pod itself, or it would have showed up on the control panels, which meant the problem lay outside, in the launching systems, systems controlled by the ship's AI, Hannah. Hazel accessed the AI through her comm implant, but there was only silence. The lack of response was somehow more worrying than the previous gibberish. Hazel called again. There was someone listening. She could feel it. When the answer finally came, it was like a whisper at midnight, as though the sound was traveling from somewhere impossibly far away.
Hazel? Everything feels wrong. Parts of me are missing, and I can't find them. I can't think properly. There are shadows in my memories, running loose like rats in a barn. Help me, Hazel. Stop them. Please, stop them.
It's so cold in here. And I'm afraid.
Hannah! Listen to me, Hannah! I'm stuck in escape pod 7. I need you to run through the launch sequence for me. Can you hear me, Hannah?
Forget the AI. She's falling apart like everything else on this ship. The shard's on her last run, going out in a blaze of glory. I've activated the pod launch from the bridge. You'll be on your way in a moment. Just as well. You'd never have made a good clone, Legger, Hazel. Too soft where it matters. If you get out of this alive, raise a drink to me and the shard. She was a good ship.
And before Hazel could say anything, the escape pod blasted out of its hatch and plummeted toward the planet below. On the bridge of the Darkwind, Captain Silence studied the small craft on his view screen as it slowly closed the distance between them. The Darkwind's disruptors had hammered away most of the pirate's force shields, and it was only a matter of time now before they failed entirely. And once that happened, it would all be over in seconds. It was a miracle the pirate's shields had lasted this long. The captain must have drained the ship's batteries dry to power them. The ship continued to drift closer, and Silence frowned thoughtfully. The pirate was up to something. He could feel it in his bones. He glanced at the investigator beside him, and saw that she was scowling intently at the viewscreen, too.
"Pirate ship's speed increasing, Captain," said his comm officer suddenly. "Accelerating steadily toward us."
"He's trying to ram us,"
said Frost.
"The force shields will stop him."
"But he must know that," said Silence. "So why is he doing it?"
"Captain! Our shields are dropping! They don't answer the control panels!"
"Odin, what's happening?"
The pirate ship has infected my systems with a virus, which is supposed to be impossible,
said the Star Cruiser's AI.
It's bypassing all my safeguards. I've never encountered anything quite like this. Systems are crashing faster than I could isolate them. Our force shields are down, and I am unable to raise them again. The pirate ship will impact with us in 6 minutes and 14 seconds.
Recommendations?
Abandon ship. If you leave now, most of the escape craft will survive the ensuing blast and should make a safe landing on Viramond. Go now, Captain. It's the only chance you have.
Silence looked at Frost, and then round his magnificent bridge. So many systems, so many highly trained personnel, and still there was nothing he could do to save his ship. He took a deep breath and let it out slowly. He patched into the shipwide address channel, and then paused a moment longer to be sure his voice would be calm and steady when he spoke.
Attention all hands. This is the captain. Abandon ship. I say again, abandon ship. This is not a drill. Remember your training and make your way to the nearest escape craft. We'll reassemble on Viramond. Good luck, everyone. Captain out.
He looked around him and clapped his hands briskly.
All right, that's it. Clear the bridge. Everyone out.
His people rose quickly to their feet and left the bridge with a professional minimum of fuss. Investigator Frost turned to go, and then stopped as she realized Silence wasn't moving.
Aren't you coming, Captain?
No, Investigator. This captain is going down with his ship. The main bulk of the Darkwind will probably survive the initial impact and only break up on entering the atmosphere. I have to be here to guide the ship down for as long as I can. I have to make sure the pieces will land safely in one of the oceans. Hundreds of thousands could be killed if any of the pieces were to land in an inhabited area.
You are more important. The Empire has a great deal of time and money invested in you, Captain. The colonists are just peasants. They don't matter.
They matter to me. Clear the bridge, Investigator. There's nothing you can say that will persuade me to leave.
No, I don't suppose there is.
She hit him once, efficiently, and he slumped forward in his command chair, unconscious. Frost checked the pulse in his neck, nodded once, and then picked the captain up and slung him almost effortlessly over one shoulder.
Odin, this is Investigator Frost. Acknowledge.
Acknowledged, Investigator.
The captain is indisposed. I am placing you in command. You will do everything in your power to guide the ship down so that its eventual impact does the minimum possible damage to inhabited areas. You understand I cannot take the risk of downloading you and taking you with us. There is no telling how much damage the infecting virus has done to your systems or how infectious it remains.
Yes, Investigator, I understand.
Frost looked once around the empty bridge.
Goodbye, Odin.
Goodbye, Investigator. Safe journey.
Frost turned and left the bridge, with the captain still unconscious over her shoulder. The empty bridge was filled with the low sound of the AI singing quietly to itself, and the pirate ship growing ever larger on the view screen. The Shard and the Darkwind, locked together, cartwheeled slowly through the silent night, falling toward Viramond. The Man Who Had Everything. The Deathstalker, Owen, Lord of Viramond, last of a famous warrior line, lay naked and exhausted among the crumpled silk sheets of his bed, and wondered lazily if he could work up the strength to call for a tall iced drink. It was late in the morning of another perfect day on the best of all possible worlds. The sun was shining. What passed for birds on Viramond were singing their little hearts out. Everyone was busy at their work, and he didn't have to leave his bed for ages yet, if he didn't feel like it. He sighed and stretched slowly and smiled the slow, smug smile of the truly satisfied. He'd just had amazing sex with his long-term mistress, and when she got back from wherever she'd disappeared to, he fully intended to do it all again. Practice makes perfect. She wasn't really his mistress, in the sense that he didn't pay her a retainer or anything, but he liked the ancient word, with its undertones of sin and debauchery. He stretched again unhurriedly, content as a cat in the sun, staring up at the ceiling high above. When he did finally choose to get up, his most recent history was waiting in the computers for him to take up work on it again. It was a good piece, sharp and pointed and full of new insights. The kind of work he'd always known he was capable of, if he could just get away from interfering distractions, like having to train with sword and gun every morning, and study military tactics every afternoon in order to be the warrior his line demanded of him. No one had ever asked him if he wanted to be another bloody fighter like all his revered ancestors. But that was all behind him now. His father was dead. He'd inherited the title, and his life was his own at last. In short, he'd got it all. No doubt eventually he'd start getting bored with such perfection in several years or so. But until then, he was determined to enjoy every minute of it. And why not? He was a nice guy. He deserved it. He looked around the huge stone chamber with its hanging tapestries and centuries-old hollows. The Deathstalker standing hadn't changed outwardly in generations. Every modern convenience was in place, ready to hand or call, but expertly concealed behind the traditional overlay. The standing had been the home of the Deathstalker clan for generations beyond counting, serving all their various needs with calm efficiency. When Owen had bought the lordship of Virimond, he'd had the entire castle dismantled, stone by stone, and had it and its contents shipped to Virimond, where it was reassembled surprisingly quickly by a small army of fanatical experts. You can do things like that when you're a lord. The standing was his, wherever he decided to plant his roots. All that was required of him was that he preserve it and hold it in trust for future generations. Assuming he ever got around to marrying and producing a next generation. His mistress was a delightful sort, but not at all the kind of person one married. As head of one of the oldest families in the Empire, he had a duty to marry someone of his own rank and station. And he would. Eventually. Owen looked thoughtfully at the giant hollow on the wall opposite his bed, showing the original Deathstalker in all his fearsome aspect and martial glory. Warrior prime of the Empire, and founder of the clan that still bore his name. He looked a bit rough and ready in his thick furs and steel-mesh tunic, bristling with weapons, his head shaved in a mercenary scalp lock, but it didn't take too much imagination to transform his warrior's arrogance into a lord's nobility. According to family history, he'd been the greatest fighting man of his day, unanimously elected warrior prime, and elevated to the peerage by popular acclaim. Hard man by all accounts, and a bit of a bastard, but the public liked that in their heroes. Bloodied his sword on 100 worlds, and never backed away from an insult or a war.